Hey everybody, welcome back to Arcade Cozy, the coziest game room on the internet. My name is Chris.
My name is Corey.
And we're back again after a week away. It seems like it's happening more and more, but man, life be hectic. Usually just bet on if we miss a week, it's Chris's fault on that one, especially right now, because, it's just like, it's work and then it's home renovation stuff and then it's work and then it's home. And it's like, there's barely enough time to sleep anymore, Corey.
I understand. I mean, I'm not pointing any fingers at you. You're just pointing them at yourself.
Yeah, I know. Well, I have to own up. It's important for everybody. And I think like early, like whenever we would usually record, I was looking at it and I was like, man, there's not even a minute in here to try and just drop this one out.
You're at 10:30 at night. Hey, I'm wrapping up. And I'm like, I'm going to bed.
But you know, here's the bright side, Corey. It means, cause I unfortunately haven't had a ton of time to play games. So saving it a week gives me a little bit more to talk about. Let's come at it with a little bit more. Obviously you don't need that time, Corey. You've been pounding Baldur's Gate in more ways than one, I would imagine. I can't wait to hear about that because I'm very envious. A lot of people, if you haven't heard, Baldur's Gate 3, people like it. Who would have thought?
Who knew?
Yeah, I mean, it is kind of a surprising thing. I think like people, you being a D&D person, it was obviously already on your radar. Me as a like just RPG person, it was on my radar for that, where even divorced from the D&D side, it's like, hey, it's Larian Studios. You know, they're like, they did Divinity. And Baldur's Gate is an old Bioware IP. Like, I mean, it's classic RPG stuff, all about it. I'm here for it. But it seemed like whenever it like officially launched, everybody was like, oh my God, I'm going to play this game now. This is going to be the next Witcher, Skyrim. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Like people people so into it, everybody of all sorts. So, it's exciting. Corey, there's not really a whole lot of news. There's not really a whole lot going on. So let's dive into it. Tell me about Baldur's Gate 3. Tell me how that's going.
Okay. We're going to get into the thick of it. I'm going to set the stage for what Baldur's Gate 3 is, and then I'm kind of go into my time with it. Mm-hmm. Like you already said, Baldur's Gate 3, Larian Studios, it uses the D&D IP, specifically the 5th edition of Dungeons & Dragons. For people who, and majority of people who know what Dungeons & Dragons is, the 5th edition is the 5th set of rules, not really, it's like the 8th set of rules that have come down for D&D. Fifth edition is the most recent. It's about to go to like 5.5. I forget, they're calling it like D&D 1 or something like that next year. But it is generally considered the most approachable of all of the editions. It's the most, I don't want to say basic, but kind of basic based on my knowledge of it. And I would say my knowledge is pretty extensive of it, unless we're going back to like initial like Dungeons and Dragons 1, but compared to 3.5e, and 4, which are very, very more complex than what 5th edition is. 5th edition's fairly straightforward. Yep. And so they have taken that and they've turned it into a full-on CRPG. And it is genuinely one of the greatest games I've ever played. If not the greatest game I have ever played.
Okay.
I think I've made a similar claim to Tears of the Kingdom earlier this year.
Mm-hmm. And maybe Final Fantasy 16.
I think Final Fantasy 16 has one of the most incredible narratives I've played.
Okay.
I think from a full game perspective, we talked about it. We're going to do a spoiler full on it of where its highs are very high and it has some issues with it. But I think you can largely like look past those with the links it goes to in its other spots. Back to Baldur's Gate 3. So where do I really begin? There's a bit more, I guess, to it. The Larian Studios have come out and said it is a 3-act game. There's Act 1, Act 2, Act 3. I just finished Act 2 earlier today. I'm around the 40-hour mark. Everything I've read has said that Act 3 is like the size of Act 1 and 2 combined, if not a little bit longer. And I'm like, okay, good to know. But Baldur's Gate 3 is the third game in the Baldur's Gate line of games. 1 and 2 came out in the 90s, early 2000s, made by BioWare, who did Mass Effect, Dragon Age, all of those. It was kind of their like original sphere of gaming. And Baldur's Gate 3, story-wise, takes place like 120 years later. For those who don't know everything that goes into it, you can either start with your own character, your own hero, or you can pick one of 7 origin characters. Those are your party members, and slash there's one other one called the Dark Urge, which is essentially like if you're ever doing a playthrough and you just want to go like the evilest of evil routes, you would play that route. And it has like a whole detailed story behind it of like, this is why this character is super evil. You don't know a lot of why they are, and you're going to figure out why they are. But like throughout, you're given choices of very evil, like consequences and decisions.
Yeah.
But for me, I have played a half high elven paladin, Oath of Vengeance. His name is Ajax, after the Greek hero. And I have loved it. It is, in terms of gaming giving you different, I think where Baldur's Gate 3 shines so much for me is in its dialogue and its choices and the events and the consequences of your own actions. For a lack of a better word.
Yep.
There are a couple of different phases to gameplay similar to Dungeons and Dragons. There's combat, which I've seen a lot of people say, oh, this is hard. And it is. But as someone who's played D&D for a long time, like it's fairly intuitive for me to understand like how to do it. I'm like, okay, positioning, high ground, tanks in the front. Like I know pretty much my perfect party composition ahead of time. While I was seeing a lot of people were struggling figuring out what worked and what didn't work, I'm like, I already knew that. There's exploration, and which goes into overworld exploration or dungeon as the titular part of Dungeons and Dragons exploration. And then there is social aspects, which is dialogue, befriending, handling like enemies, whether to engage in combat or not. And that's, in my opinion, is where the social dynamic of it shines so much in this game. To give an example, it's an act two. And we're going to get into a little bit of the beginning and through on, but this is something that stood out so well to me. I texted you about it. I come across what is essentially the leader of like a dark god within this world. Of this like small cult like section of it. You come across, he's doing this thing. He's like, I have to cleanse people. XYZ, like normal culty evil stuff. And he was like, how about I do that to you? And those for you who don't know, as a paladin, and in D&D, you have different ability score slots. There's 6 of them. And you want certain ones to be higher and other ones you can live to be lower depending on your class. As a paladin, you need your strength higher because you're a frontline fighter, but you also need your charisma higher. Charisma is your spellcasting stat, or what you use to base your spellcasting stats off of. Paladins, warlocks, sorcerers, and bards use charisma. Wizards use intelligence. And druids and clerics use wisdom. So I use charisma, and that works really well because I get to be the face of the party. Essentially, I get my character handles most of the social interactions, dialogues, because I have a high deception score, a high intimidation score, and a high persuasion score because my charisma is high. And so I can convince people to do stuff. I can lie, and I can just like bully people into doing what I need them to do. But in this
classic paladin.
Classic paladin. Yeah. Either do what I say or die.
for the Lord.
Interesting enough, I promise I'm going to get to this story. Interesting enough, in traditional D&D, or especially in 5th edition, most paladins do go with some sort of deity. You can do it without it in 5th edition and Larian to make clerics more specialized in that aspect, have taken that away. They are fully like you go by your oath, not by what god you follow, which in my current D&D campaign that I'm running, one of my players, her character is an Oath of Glory, and she didn't do it under any deity. She's just like, my character wants to be a legend, and so that's what they're seeking. And so I'm doing vengeance, and vengeance is you essentially like anyone who's like trying to oppress like the weak, or those who can't care for themselves, like you are bringing them down a peg. And so it doesn't really punish you for initiating combat where some of the other ones might. But here, the guy, he's like, I'm going to cleanse you. What do you say? And I had a couple different options. It was, you know, kind of, I'm good. I'm just going to leave. And there's one where I don't remember the exact line, but it's essentially get into like a theological debate with him, like bait him into it. Another one's just like straight up attack him. Or there was a fourth option, or the fourth option was like, yeah, I'll hop on the table, like do your thing. And I'm like, let's get into what all this is about right now. Like, what are you doing? All that. And it went around and I passed enough like persuasion, deception checks. And I convinced him to essentially off himself. And because it got to the end of it, and I'm like, you know, you're trying to grow this cult, and if you want them to reach the levels that you want, what does working on me do anything? I don't believe in what you do. You are your like foremost believer here.
Yeah.
This allows them, I think the line's like, the student now can become the master if you make the sacrifice. And he's like, I like your words, paladin man. I'm gonna do it. And he just lets them kill him. And they're like, thank you so much. Like we've ascended now. Or your friend. And it's a very creepy, very spooky, like deeply horrific, like a gory atmosphere. I'm like, thumbs up, finger gun away. Like, yeah, glad we got out of there. Like, you know, you wipe the sweat off your brow. But it was, I couldn't believe that the game just like let me talk him into doing that. Like, I could have easily just like, no, let's brawl. Let's just do it. Like, I'm here to take you out. That's my quest. But you get into this whole like philosophical debate with him, and he's just like, you know, I think you're right. I'm just going to do that. And it's insane. There are many other stories I could tell. I try to keep that one as vague as possible.
Yeah.
But for anyone who does come across it, you'll kind of recognize immediately, oh, this is that. And I'm sorry if I've spoiled a little bit of that for you. It is a difficult like way to get to, though. It's not just a choice. And you roll once. I think there's like four or five like successive like checks you have to make to get to it. But to scale it back a bit, the game opens with you on a Mind Flayer ship. This isn't spoilers. This is literally the opening like sequence of the game.
Yeah.
It's in every trailer, everything that they've shown. Mind Flayers are essentially like Cthulhu aliens. within the world of D&D, and they're trying to take over everything. And so the game starts with you getting a Mind Flayer tadpole inserted into your brain, which means you will turn into a Mind Flayer in the next like week. Mm-hmm. And it's you and a couple other characters on the ship escape. You wake up on a beach. And from there in Act 1, I think it does an incredible job of teaching you the game, of teaching you D&D, where you assemble your party. And we talked about in our last episode which characters I wanted. I'm going to give them to you now. So I assembled my party. I got Shadowheart, the cleric.
There you go.
Okay. I picked up Gale, the wizard.
Of course. I believe that was the one I recommended against, but go on.
No, you recommended Halson, who I do have.
Yeah.
You get him very late, though. Okay. You don't get him until probably midway through Act 2. He's with you from like half of Act 1 on, but he won't join your party until like halfway through Act 2.
Okay.
So I went with Karlach, who I also said before, she's the best character.
Okay. She's the tiefling.
Yeah. Yeah. And I also picked up Will by accident.
He was the warlock guy.
He's the warlock. I never invited him. He just joined. And I'm like, who invited you? Because I didn't. Because you do this whole sequence where he joins midway through one of your fights and you're talking with him just like, what are you doing here? Like, oh, you're Blade of Frontiers. That's neat. What's going on? All right. Well, nice meeting you. And you look over, why are you here? And he's just like along for the ride. I will say he has a very interesting story. Okay. They've changed him a lot from early access. I played early access and he's much different. Very, very cool plot line, in my opinion.
Okay.
I don't use him that much. Not because warlocks are necessarily bad or underpowered. I just have found the flexibility of Gale as a wizard, who also has I'll get into it in a little bit, but just wizards can do basically everything. He's my everything guy, which makes it much easier to roll with. But Act 1 teaches you so much of the game. You assemble your party. I didn't pick up Lazelle or Asterion. I accidentally killed Lazelle. Well, I didn't kill her. I just watched her die and didn't intervene.
Now, which one was this?
She's the Githyanki.
The fighter lady?
Yes. Everything I've read is like she has a really good story, and I'm like, oh well, second playthrough. and then in Act 1, you're kind of essentially brought into a primary conflict of these druids that Halson leads, but he's kind of away, and so they have like a stand-in who's a little maniacal, like she's doing some bad stuff, trying to kick out these tiefling refugees. And there's a goblin camp across the initial Act 1 map who's like trying to find them. And you can kind of choose which side you want to go with. One's definitely an evil side. One's clearly the good side. The game teaches you, here's the stakes. Here's a world. Go explore it. You find characters. You can assemble your party. It kind of gives you some groundwork for the larger story. Oh, this Duke is missing. Oh, one of your characters, Shadowheart, is a follower of Shar, super evil goddess. But there's a lot of stuff going with Selune, who is the enemy of Shar. There's a lot of her statues. There's a temple around here. Oh, there's a conflict here. I won't get too much more into it for spoiler's sake, but there's a lot more that happens, and it sets up so much of like a big conflict, some small conflicts, and you kind of get to, it shows you quite quickly, here's the decision, here's the consequences of your actions based on that decision. And they can be very good, they can be very bad. One can lead to like all the like tiefling refugees like not making it, like they can all die. You take out the goblin camp and you save this guy, or you don't save this guy and he dies and he's a crucial part of it and he might be able to help you. Or there's a devil who shows up and he's like, hey, I'll take that thing out of your eye if you just signed a deal for me. And it's like, you get to do a deal with the devil and there's consequences for that.
Okay.
There's so many different things where it just slowly teaches you, like, it's an immediate, like, here this is, make your decision. For the larger conflict, there's a little bit more back and forth, a little bit more like decisions to make. There's one where you come across a barn, there's weird noises going on. Your party members are like, some of your party members are like, let's not open the door. Like, that sounds not our business. And one's like, we should just do it. Let's see what happens. Kind of a thing. And then the titular BioWare Dragon Age formula, when you do something based on their decisions, they'll show this character approves or this character disapproves. And depending, you can see how much they like you or don't like you throughout the game. And if they don't like you a lot, they will try to kill you or they'll leave the party. One of the two, depending on their characteristics. But some will try to kill you or they will try to bone you, because everyone wants to bone you in this game. I am not kidding, where it's literally I've known you for 2 days. 2 days, Gail. I thought you were teaching me magic. You're just trying to get my pants. And that's a large part of...
Classic Gail.
Classic Gail. He just lays it on too thick, if we're being honest. But that's essentially the game there. Do you have any questions, Chris, during my presentation?
No. I mean, that's the thing is, like, even though I don't have a ton of experience with D&D, I mean, like, I feel, even though I don't feel like I have a full grasp of the breadth of what's happening, but I do feel like I have some sort of idea, because it's like, I've played a little bit of D&D. I'm familiar with D&D. Mm-hmm. And I've also played Divinity, which, like, you know, I know it's a different game, but, like, I think I have the perspective to be able to look at it and be like, okay, like, this, I think I know what's coming down the line. So, yeah, I mean, everything that you're saying tracks to where I'm like, okay, I get it. It's a big old beefy boy of a game, and it's got, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on. A lot of stuff sounds fun.
Yeah. I mean, the amount of fun I'm having with it is unreal. It rewards you so much for exploration. You go through the world, you come across this small little tunnel, at least with this huge dungeon, not huge, but like sizable dungeon, and you get to the end and it rewards you with maybe a new companion or something along those lines. Really cool sword, just the dopest sword you could think of, and you find it. Or sparrow scrolls, or there's a lot of gold and XYZ, you name it. Like, it, there is such a wonder to exploring the world that they have set forth. The initial map, Act 2's map is significantly smaller, but Act 1's map is gargantuan. It might not seem like that, but keep poking and it just gets bigger. But every little nook and cranny you're going across, you're finding something, or you're casting Speak with Animals and you talk to a frog and he was like, I know where treasure is. Thank you. I've been waiting for someone to talk to me. I'll show you where it's at. And you're like, this is dope. Let's go. There's more there, but I'll leave it at that. The game goes on and on like that. Or you'll come across some mercenaries that you ran before, and then you're like, what are you guys even doing out here? And they're like, well, we're looking for this. We're kind of done. You know, we were paid to come out here. We don't know what to do. We don't know where this is at. Here, you take it. Like, let me know if you can find it. Well, I found it in Act 2, and I can't even tell you the immeasurable weight there was to finding it. It was so crucial to the plot and such a throwaway line that I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, I could have missed that. They could have just not been there. Like, what if they had died back in that fight, like, a couple hours ago? What do you mean? And the game just goes online. Like, so many important characters could just die, and you would never even know. And I say that as an incredible testament to the game of how much there's going on there, that like I've tried to stay off of Reddit and see what other people are talking about, but I've poked around just a bit and yeah. I've seen what some people were saying, like, that, what? How did that even happen? Like, who even is this character? I've done all of Act One and you're talking about someone I've never even met. And
yeah.
There's so many scenarios like that. And it rewards, I think, your exploration, but it like calls for more playthroughs, because I don't even know what the side would be like had I sided with the goblins, because I sided with the tieflings and the druids. But in early access, I did it with the goblins, and then there's a whole like other side to that story that you can now follow, which blows my mind that in my 40 hours, there's a whole other essentially 30 hours of different story that I've experienced compared to what like, you know, I've done now. Yeah, I think genuinely I can't stop playing it, can't stop thinking about it. It's so good. I think the combat makes me want to be a better DM, a dungeon master, because I'm seeing these setups and combats. I'm like, holy crap. And it's not, looking at them, like, wow, I take it so easy on my players. If they're listening, I'm sorry. because I went into a combat encounter yesterday and I was getting destroyed, but it was so smart on the enemy's end. Like, they bottlenecked me, cast slow, throwing me in darkness. I couldn't get anywhere at all. And they were just like, I was going up against a buzzsaw. And I'm like, okay, now I have to think my way out of this. Can't brute. It was probably the first fight that had come up. It's late in Act Two that it had come up. That I'm like, oh, I can't just send my barbarian in to tank, send my guy in as the paladin to smite away their heavy hitters, and keep my wizard on the back line just dropping spells, like shooting nukes from a distance. And then my cleric healing, buffing, and debuffing from the sides. Because that was just the bread and butter of most combat encounters that had come across. It's send Karlak and me into the front. And then have Gale and Shadowheart up high, hopefully. Just like doing spell stuff without getting into details. And that worked for so much. Because that is arguably one of the best D&D a four-man D&D group, in my opinion. You have your tank, you have your striker, your utility, and then your range damage. And that can be wizard. I wouldn't know a ranger. Rangers are bad. to be fair, I will say Larian has made a lot of classes better than what they are in actual D&D. Like marshals, instead of like, oh, I hit. Well, that's my turn. It's, oh, I can do a hamstring shot, and I now have decreased their speed by half. Or I can do a laceration shot, and they're bleeding, which means they're going to take an extra D4, like, around. It's harder to hit that way, but I get to do more damage over time, kind of a thing. And they've made barbarians who arguably like get weaker as they go into a more formidable class as they go. Very nice. Same. They've, I forgot what else did they? They've modified clerics just a wee bit and how, what they go about. I think wizards pretty straightforward beat for beat, but they've modified some classes just to make them a bit better. And I think that works really well for what they're going for. But this one encounter, I'm like, I was beating my head against the wall and I had to find essentially a new way out of it. And the funny thing, which you can do is, and any, I don't know if people know this, but you should know it now. If you are ever in a social interaction with another character that you know is going to turn hostile, like there is no avoiding it. I mean, there is some avoiding some of them, but this was one where it was like, there's no avoiding this. Well, I could avoid it, but then I'd be killing my allies that I've brought with me. Like, I've made my decision. Now I have to face the consequences of that decision, kind of a thing. If you are ever in a conversation, you can switch to another character and just attack them. And so I was my guys talking to this half-orc lady who also wanted to bone me. She's very evil, and she was like, "Oh yes, oh yes, you are going to be mine." And I'm like, "I'm not. I'm sorry."
Oh yes,
Karlach and Shadowheart already both are vying for my heart. I know Halson back at camp also wants me. There's just not enough room. There's not enough me to go around.
Yep.
Gale, if you don't mind. And I switched over to Gale and just like fireballed them. And it was like, oh, okay. Well, let's roll initiative. Which is just like pure D&D where one character will be talking. And it's like, is anybody else wanting to do anything while this is going on? Yeah, I cast fireball on the enemies.
Yep. Yep.
Okay. That's what I'm doing. Yeah. I think it's hilarious that it's just like you're just having this full conversation. The wizard starts poking out. What are they doing? Don't worry about them. Why is he casting? But yeah, it's so good. It's so fun. It's so wacky. There are just some of the craziest, stupidest things that can happen. That you can completely avoid an entire boss encounter. If they are near a ledge, you can just shove them off the ledge and they are dead.
Okay.
They could have 100 more hit points than you do and you just shove them. You don't get their loot that way, which sucks. But if you ever are just like near a ledge and you're like, there's no way I win this fight, you just shove them off a cliff and fight's over.
Love it.
Yeah, it's amazing. I think Larian's an incredible job. The voice acting is phenomenal. You can see that they had fun making all these characters, and like all these characters fall in the D&D trope. You have like Gale, which is that one player who writes the 10-page backstory. Mm-hmm. You have like a player who plays Shadowheart that's like, I don't know, here's a couple of lines. This is what my character is, kind of a thing. And the DM gets to then like roll with it. You have the one character who is just like the F it, we ball energy, which is what Karlach is. And you can see that they have a love for lore, what D&D is, for the genre. And it just is so player focused on so much of, here's this wonderful world. Here's all these hundreds of different web-like plot lines. Choose whatever you want to do. You might not always be able to do it, but you get to, like, there is a result. It's not just a and no. There's a, well, you didn't quite do what you wanted, so here's what happens now. And sometimes that's combat. Sometimes it's a guy being like, I want you to do a little bit more for me, and then I'll do it. Or it's F off kind of a thing. But they're still there. You can try and win their favor back. Like, it goes on and on. Everything you can want and do there, it pretty much lets you do. There are very little no's in this game. Okay. And I think that's wonderful. I don't think it should be a benchmark for other studios to go by, but I think the general message of allowing players to have their truest agency in what they're wanting to do in a game should be a priority going forward.
Yeah. Well, and I think that that's one of the, probably one of the things that people love the most about D&D is just the fact that like it is so open-ended in the way that you can just go and you can make choices and see what happens. And like in a way that, board games don't, a lot of video games don't, like, you know, there are so many restrictions for so many reasons. And so, to have something that is, okay, well, how can I, cause I mean, like Divinity also had that to an extent where it was very like, there was a feeling of just kind of, I can do anything and something can happen here. Like there could be, I could be in this fight and like, I see a barrel and like, maybe do we think that barrel has oil in it? If I were to throw a candle at that barrel, would it explode? I guess let's see. And like, you know, it's just, I think there's, I think it's one of those things like that scratches, like whenever people fall in love with something like Tears of the Kingdom or, you know, whatever, like having that level of autonomy to just be able to like play the game in your very own unique way and have your very own unique kind of fun and very own unique stories come out of it, I think is like a very like enticing thing for a lot of people.
And it rewards your creativity so much. In that fight I was talking about where they're dropping the spell called Darkness, where it just like obscures this entire area and makes it difficult for your characters to walk through, I instead just went ahead and tossed, there was like smaller characters, I would have Karlach just like pick them up and throw them out of the darkness. And that way they didn't have to run. It's just like, I'm going to throw them out there. And sure enough, they're out there and they can now go do their own thing. And as well, I've avoided them having to run through this whole thing because I've just yeeted them across the map. And yeah, it's just like little things like that of like, man, I wish I could just throw them. The game's like, well, you can. You can absolutely do that. And yeah, it's truly a masterpiece. I will say it, I'm playing it on Steam Deck. And it took a good bit to get it to run on Steam Deck in the way I wanted. It ran fine initially at 60 FPS, but it looked like a PS1 game doing that. So I had to mess around with some of the video stuff. I had to like bring the FPS down to like a 25, and then I could like boost the graphics up, and it's gorgeous now. But it took some finagling to like really get it to play how I wanted it to.
Okay.
But yeah, I'm playing on Steam Deck, primarily docked on my TV. Haven't tried it with a controller yet. I need to. I've been playing with a mouse and keyboard, primarily just mouse. Okay. You don't really need the keyboard, at least with how I have set up my control scheme on the Steam Deck, which is just pretty seamless, pretty easy. But yeah, it's quite lovely. I'm excited for Act 3. Act 2 is very short compared to Act 1. It takes what I do a lot of, now you're put in an environment, here's the overall environment issue, here's your end goal of the issue. Yep. There's a couple things you need to tackle in between, but all around this is a save the day scenario, so kind of go about it how you wish. And that's kind of what Act 2 is. It condenses everything you've learned down, and it's like, now all of this is just one big dungeon. Act 2 is just one giant dungeon is the best way to look at it.
Okay.
And it's like, okay, work your way through it how you wish. It's pretty straightforward. You're going to start all the way up here, and your end goal is down here. There's a couple things in between, and knock it out. And it like really challenges. Everything's a bit more challenging there. And I know Act 3 is essentially double the size of Act 1 and 2, and it combines those two things of like, the whole thing's now the dungeon, but now all the elements of Act 1, all the decision-making, all the choices are now incorporated back in, because it's a little sparser on the decision-making in Act 2.
Okay, weird.
In terms of like a big story, or like small story, I guess is a better way to put it, small story events, there isn't as much. Like, there isn't helping this bard write her song in Act 1, like kind of a thing.
Yeah.
It's more of a, do I save this village? Do I help cleanse this rot? Do I save these prisoners? And a very important decision for one character in your party. And that's kind of it in Act 2. There's a bit more, but that's me generalizing it.
Okay.
But Act 2 is far more of, this is just a big dungeon. Like, gotta be careful how you get around. There's enemies everywhere. Bit spooky.
Baldur's Gate 3. It's
expect to hear sweet. So much more, especially when I do like other playthroughs.
Yeah. Well, and you'll be playing through it more. I'll play through it when I get the chance, when it comes to other things, starting at the beginning of September. When Corey's wrapping up his first playthrough, I'll be starting up on mine. Who knows what I'll be playing?
Give me Druid, like Circle of Spores vibes.
Ooh. I honestly don't. Well, because like I think about my time with like World of Warcraft, for instance, and like what my gut was like. And I think I talked about this last week. Like, I played for the longest time, played a warrior. Like, that was kind of my thing. Like, being a tank, being a warrior, like, I just kind of, like, that was something that I really vibed with. And, you know, I've done that in other games too, where I've just really, like, whenever I played Divinity, Original Sin, I mean, I played as one of the origin characters, but I played as, like, a tankier, class. Like, my character was sword and shield and just going in. So there's like, there's something there, but I'm also kind of like, I think my gut right now in my head is either bard or monk. I think that's where my I think that's where my head is right now.
Bard is personally my favorite class, followed closely behind paladin. But bard, I debated multiclassing into a bardadin, or palard.
Palard.
I thought about it. They go very well hand in hand. The bard's the ultimate utility character, and then as you get to higher levels, it becomes not only a utility character, you can turn it into whichever other idea. Do you want them to be like high, like range damage? Absolutely. If you went College of Valor, you can turn them fully into a striker towards the end with some of the higher spells that you can pick. So on and so forth.
Now you can, so you can multi-class. Okay. Because I do remember that also, again, like my perspective being like Divinity, I do remember having like multi-class opportunities where I feel like I remember having like this character was a like warlock and ranger, and this character was a like, you know, rogue and cleric, and like I was, you know, messing around with a lot of different things. But that's good to know, at least that you can multi-class. That's nice.
Yeah, there's definitely like some synergy stuff you have to like think about when you're doing it. Like a barbarian wizard, while very fun, kind of doesn't work because you can't cast spells while you're raging, which is the big part of barbarian. Or something like, that's really the main one that doesn't really work. Like a druid, sorcerer would just be like weird. You'd have to have like too many stats, like bumps and other stuff. So yeah, but just think about it. But I'm excited to see what you end up doing. I'm excited to see what Act 3 brings, because it's not really until the end of Act 2 that like, okay, this is what we're fighting against. This is what we're doing. This is like the issue now. It takes its time, like really like pulling the party together. There's a lot of party interaction, sometimes not as much as I would like, with a lot of just like discussions, personal stuff. You're working through it, much like any D&D campaign where you hit the 2/3 mark and the players like understand, oh, this is that we should probably set aside our personal problems to handle this, and we can do that stuff later. That's kind of where they're Act 3 is leading, of like, someone's got to do something about this. And you're kind of looking around and everyone's like, oh, it's us. Okay.
Corey, one last question before we move on. How do you feel knowing that you are the, because you said you're a half elf paladin? That's your main character?
Yes. Okay. I know, I'm basic.
Yeah, I was about to say, how does it feel knowing that you are a basic boy? According to Larian, who said that the highest played class right now is paladin, and the highest highest played race right now is half elf.
Yeah. Well, so I wanted to play a full elf, but their face models are so weird. You're either a Giga Chad or like the nerdiest of nerds. There's no just like fine, like handsome face. Yeah. It's either like handsome Squidward, or like
thick chin.
Yeah. And my next playthrough, I think I want to go something just like diabolical. like like halfling barbarian.
Look at you.
I think it's just such a funny combination. I think it's just absolutely hysterical, honestly. Like this 3'2" guy with the biggest great axe you could imagine just like cleaving people in half. I think it's hilarious.
That was the stuff that
throwing
I always
throwing other people.
Yeah, that was the thing that I always thought about. Like because I started playing World of Warcraft whenever I was in middle school. And so for me, like it always vibed to pick stuff that just like really seemed like the right choice in my head. I was like, okay, like I want a warrior. I'm going to make a dwarf warrior. Like they're beefy. They're thick. They can go at it. And then whenever I wanted to make a rogue, I made a night elf rogue, which night elf was, I mean, effectively, I guess maybe the, like a wood elf drow kind of like mixture equivalent. You know, it just kind of had that kind of thing. And then later on, it became the complete opposite where it was like, I would play with people who played as like gnome warriors where they were the main tank, like tanking these 60 feet tall things. And then his healer would be just this big cow in a dress who would just be throwing out heals, like, you know, just left and right. And so it was always this, it was always having this fun dichotomy watching that stuff happen.
Yeah. No, it's fun. I love it. I also the thought of being a tiefling warlock of the archfey instead of the fiend. And so it's like this fey goddess with like this devil boy. I don't know. And I like thinking of, I like doing stuff that's not super out of the box, let's be real.
Yeah.
But, you know, things, it's a little fun. But for my first one, I think paladins are just such a cool class. I have seen there's a lot of RP stuff with warlocks and clerics that, again, just almost brings a whole nother element to the game. And I'm excited to see what that's all about. It's going to be good.
Love it.
I might do one playthrough as an origin character down the line because they've said when you play as the one of the origins, the story's a bit different. It's more centered around them, and there's only certain outcomes that can happen when you play as them for certain for things. Okay. So I think I might want to give that a go.
Love it. Sweet. Yeah. Corey?
That's what I've been playing. What have you been playing, Chris?
So I haven't said anything yet. I'm thinking like, oh, it's kind of a roller coaster. Not really. I haven't played like a ton of stuff, but here's what I have been playing. So last we talked, I was diving in on some of the Alan Wake DLC, I think. Did Alan Wake DLC. Then after Alan Wake DLC, I did the Control Alan Wake DLC. And I want to talk about that little like bundle of things first. And I want to talk about it in two parts, the actual like playing through it. And then the like big old lore implications, which may have a few little like spoilery things, at least on that part. So just be aware, but at least like game wise playing through it, Alan Wake DLC, very interesting and very kind of cool. Like, you know, I'll dig into it a little bit more with the like lore implication stuff, but like where you are set in the DLCs, you're not exactly in like the real world, quote unquote. So it's a lot more like it's much more dreamy, a lot more metaphysical. And so they're playing around with a lot more stuff than they did in the original, where it was just like, you're running through Oregon. It's, you know, you're in this, I think one of the big things that stands out as like really interesting is that they would have like these, word pop-ups kind of in the world where it'd be like, you know, you would be running around and there'd be just this like typewriter font that would just say boom over like a bush or something. And if you like shined your flashlight on it, and eroded that away, all of a sudden it would become this huge flashbang. Like it would boom. It would create a boom out of those words. And you would see that with stuff like, you would see the words tools and you would shine over and you would get like some restocks or okay. whatever. Or like, you know, there would be like a, you know, just stuff like that. It was yeah. like a, it was a cool thing to play with. And like the interesting thing would be like, you'd be getting swarmed by a lot of enemies and you could find like, oh, there's this boom text like over here. I can shine it really quick whenever they're running past it. And all of a sudden this flashbang like erupts in the middle of them. And like, you know, that wasn't something that was a part of the actual game. So it was kind mm-hmm. of this neat thing that they were playing with. And I guess were allowed to play with because of where the game is set at that point, that, you know, you're just able to kind of have a little bit of fun with and, you know, made it kind of cool. I will say like, it was kind of like harder. It felt harder. Okay. And also like, you know, the overall story, there isn't really much to the overall story of it because like, and again, I'll talk about it a little bit more, but it's kind of just a continuation. Alan Wake ends on like very much of a cliffhanger. This is just kind of like, you know, he's drifting a little further off of that. Like, you know, he's not exactly wrapping anything up, but he's just kind of like, you're getting a little bit more clarity of where he's at this point. So I play through that. And then I play through the Control Alan Wake DLC. Yes. Control, if you remember, everybody, also made by the Alan Wake developers. Alan Wake came out in 2010, I think. Control came out in like 2019. The only game that they did in the middle was Quantum Break, which was that Xbox One mm-hmm. game that had the, like, it was the game, but then they also had like the TV tie-in.
Yeah.
And like, I remember people thinking the game was pretty cool, but the TV stuff was, you know, whatever. I never played it, but, you know, the cool. Like yep. they did something.
Neat.
Control came out and it was very like, you know, it was very spooky. It was very weird. It was very like the vibe that I got. Did you ever watch Warehouse 13 on Sci-Fi back in the day?
No, but I have like beaten Control.
Yeah. Yeah. Like Warehouse, it reminds me kind of something like Warehouse 13, which was on Sci-Fi, which was like a monster of the week. Like they were a warehouse full of all these magical objects that gotcha. Would like okay. something would have like some like gas station attendant off in Idaho would happen upon this thing that made him invisible. And now he's like doing weird stuff and nobody knows what's going on. And so these agents from Warehouse 13 would come out and they would try to collect this object and, you know, kind of had vibes of that. Also had vibes of like, you know, the whole, what is it? Like Welcome to Night Vale and just these like weird occurrence, like X-Files, Twilight okay. Zone, yeah. like all of that kind of stuff. Control was very like, it was this Federal Bureau of Control. It's a federal entity that's, investigating weird stuff. Yes. And, and like that was a Control is like fascinating for that. Cause you would just see all of these little, like these little notes about like, yeah, you know, Jimmy over in Nebraska, found that violin again. And, you know,
yeah.
now he's 85 years old. At the end, like it's just this yep. weird stuff where like weird stuff's happening in the world. There's no explanation. And you were just you're the federal like group that are made to kind of like make sense out of all of this. And Jesse, the main character, is going through and she's, you know, there's a whole bunch of stuff happening, but she's investigating and being a part yeah. of this whole world. She's brought into all of this. So, the Alan Wake DLC, I'll talk about my experience with it. My experience with it, like, it's very neat. Like it's okay. It's cool how it ties in a lot of the Alan Wake stuff, like the light components, because there are like, they're not really enemies that get hurt from the light, but there's like a darkness that saps your energy. So you're having to like dash back and forth between light, create pockets mm-hmm. of lights. Like, there are a lot of puzzles with these batteries going into these circuits to make, you know, lights light up. And, that's kind of cool. There's also, I mean, Alan Wake is present as like a narrator voice. Yeah. So, I mean, you're hearing a lot of that. And there are a lot of like narrative implications of like what's going on, which again, I'll kind of get to. The downside was I never actually finished the Alan Wake DLC. The reason being the final boss fight, it was like my second or third try, got killed, and the game crashed on me. And I came back, like it crashed. I was like, okay. Yep. And then I reloaded, went back in. As it was loading, crashed again. And I was like, okay. And I think I tried again, and then it crashed again. So I was like, okay. I deleted it. I think I've restarted, didn't work, deleted, re-downloaded, didn't work. Did the whole like boot in safe mode, basically repair your thing to clear out corrupted files. Didn't work. And effectively like just because that was the thing was like, it wasn't like I was going at least with how Control is set up. It's like comes to the main menu, you press X, it directly loads into that game. There's not an option to like select your save file or start a new game or whatever. So it was like, it would load up main menu. I hit X, it crashes. So there wasn't any option to go outside of that. So effectively, not only was I not able to finish the game, I wasn't able to just play Control at all. That being said, like this is the PS4 version because, I vaguely remember this, but like Remedy got a lot of crap at the time whenever they did their PS5 upgrade where it was like, oh, here's the PS5 upgrade, but womp womp. If you played it on PS4, your save doesn't transfer over. So you're going to have to start over. So that was part of the whole process too, where it was like, I had the PS Plus like download. I downloaded Control. I was like, oh, I'll play the PS5. Booted up PS5.
Nope.
It was like you've never played Control before. I was like, yeah, I have. And then so I had to like delete it, download the PS4 version, and then that's where it was. So for all I know, like PS4 version is gone for me. Apparently, I can never play it again. That's what it seems like.
That's why you buy it physically.
And I do own it physically, but apparently like the data for the PS4 version apparently is just like wrecked at this point, and I just will never be able to play it again. So I might have to, if I ever want to play Control again, it's going to have to be PS5 or figure something else out.
Do the maze sequence again.
So say all of that, like that was just it was kind of like a weird, cumbersome experience. Going back to like the lore implications, very fascinated and very down for what is coming down the pipe. It seems like going into Alan Wake 2. Again, like lightish spoilers, medium spoilers. Mm-hmm. If Corey, if you're okay with medium level with spoilers for Alan Wake stuff.
I'm probably not playing Alan Wake 2, so hit me with it.
So basically, like Alan Wake, the entire crux of Alan Wake is that like Alan and his wife come to this town and they stay at this cabin on the lake. And while they're there, his wife gets pulled into this dark world by this dark presence. And so, I mean, Alan's entire journey throughout the game is trying to get his wife back. He's trying to figure out like how to do this. And you slowly like learn over time that Alan originally, because like at the very beginning of the game, she gets pulled into the darkness underwater. Alan dives in after her, and then you just wake up 10 like a week later. Like, but what happens in that week is that you're effectively like kind of imprisoned by the dark presence, and you're writing this novel. And this is the novel that you find throughout the game. Like this whole novel that like Alan doesn't remember writing, this is the novel. And the purpose of the novel, as you kind of come to learn, is that it's the dark presence influencing Alan to write a novel to effectively like make into reality its escape. Like it's like realization back into the world. And so that's kind of the whole thing. And whenever Alan Wake ends, he's coming in. I mean, there's a lot of stuff kind of setting this up and like why it is the way that it is, but effectively like he's in a position where to effectively subdue the dark presence and get his wife back, he has to kind of replace her. He has to be imprisoned in the darkness and to get her back. So for her to be living, for her to be in the real world again, he has to take her place. So that is where Alan Wake 1 ends, is with him like subduing the dark presence, his wife being back in the real world, him trapped. Like that's where you are. And so with both of the DLCs, like that's where Alan is he's kind of traversing this. He is a like effectively like real Alan in this world has like gone insane, and you are like a like metaphysical realization of Alan trying to get back to himself.
Yeah.
And,
checks out.
And so
I get it, Alan.
Yeah. Yeah. But the interesting thing, so like that whole DLC set ends with Alan coming back to himself, having a moment of lucidity, like coming back and just kind of like, you know, reckoning with himself and sitting down to start a second novel that effectively will release him from the darkness. That's
thinking, Alan.
Yeah, that's where the DLC ends, is him sitting down and being like, okay, I'm starting this novel, and this novel is going to help me get out of here. So flash forward to Control and the Control DLC. Like in Control, you know, Jesse's doing her whole thing. She's in this Federal Bureau of Control. The Alan Wake expansion, in it, Jesse starts kind of like hearing from, like, I think she's not communicating with Alan Wake, but she's hearing Alan like kind of narrating and stuff.
His notebook.
And in a way, and that's kind of like, that's kind of one of the interesting things about it. But so you go into this new sector, and it's the investigative sector, or the investigation sector. And you go down there, and there's actually a character, and I won't spoil this part, just, you know, for people who want to play through it and stuff, but the main antagonist of the Alan Wake DLC for Control is one of the characters from the original Alan Wake. So that's kind of like an interesting through line, but this character has now been like, in the lore of it, he was picked up by Control agents after Alan Wake like finished and was kind of brought back, and during that process, like he became possessed by the Hiss and all of these kind of things, and like became this monster. So you're dealing with him, and this whole time you're having kind of, you know, you're hearing Alan kind of like narrating the story, talking about these things. He's just kind of like being a little like mad at this point. Like he's not really making sense, but he's just kind of like, he's doing his thing. But again, I didn't see this in person, but like I did watch the final cutscene because effectively like I was a couple of hits from beating the boss. And then whenever you beat the boss, you get the final cutscene. So I was right there. But in the final cutscene,
Nino Kuni.
Right. Look at you. You get it. You know what I'm talking about. The final cutscene has this thing where it's like, hey, we're getting a distress call from Bright Falls, Washington, which is where Alan Wake takes place in the game. And they're like, but it doesn't make any sense. It's coming from the future. It's not. And it's effectively kind of like setting up for one, the fact that it's like, okay, they're potentially setting up the fact that like Alan Wake 2 is at this point, like Alan Wake 2 is coming and maybe Control is going to have some sort of, because they say like, oh, there's a Control agent there. Like, I wonder why they haven't reported this. And I guess like, if it hasn't happened, like, you know, that would make sense. But like, for one, could be a Control agent, could have some sort of like very direct interaction with Control. Yeah. But I think one of the really interesting things too is that like there are a lot of implications in the Alan Wake DLC that the entire events of Control are part of Alan Wake's story of him. That Jesse is a character that Alan Wake has written to effectively like to lead to him getting out of the darkness, that like Control is this entity, like that kind of thing. Like there are a lot of layers to it, but there are a lot of implications saying basically like Jesse's track through this is leading directly to Alan, like to the point where, I mean, potentially Jesse will have some sort of like interaction to, you know, help Alan escape, help Alan recover. I mean, and a lot of it's like kind of implied through a lot of narrative things where you can hear Alan in the narration kind of saying things like, you know, Jesse went to the investigation sector. Like a lot of these narrations where it very much seems like, you know, in her mind, it's not really like being realized that way, but as you're kind of getting perspective, you're kind of seeing it as like, oh, I wonder, like legitimately, I wonder if Alan is telling this story, this entire story, everything that I've played, everything that's happened till now.
Oh, that's cool. That's really cool. That's the case.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, so it makes me excited going into Alan Wake too, because it's like, okay, like this could really, who knows what could, cause they're very like intentionally trying to build up this big, like Remedy verse thing. And so the fact that they are trying to build it up that way, like there's a lot of cool stuff that could happen even outside of just like what Alan Wake is, like what kind of Control stuff could come in, what kind of like how all of that could kind of intermingle and play together. So very, very excited about that. Very That's cool. Sick. Yeah. We're running short on time, so I want to vaguely mention the other thing that I've been playing. I'll talk more about it as I've probably next week as I'm closer to finishing it. I've been playing Like a Dragon Ishin.
Yes, you have.
Old school. I mean, it's Yakuza, but set in the like 1850s, 1860s. So, nice. Yeah. And it's also like, it's very, here are broad points. One, it's wild seeing all of the different characters, because that was one of the big things is like, none of the characters are the same. Like none of the characters are like, they aren't the characters from Yakuza, but they all like share the faces of these characters. So like the main character's name is Ryoma Sakamoto. Or Ryoma I can't remember. Ryoma, his name's Ryoma. He goes by Saito Hajime for a lot of the game too.
Hype.
But it's Kiryu. Like it's Kiryu's face. It's his voice actor. And same thing with so many other characters, but it's funny because like, if you've played other Yakuza games, like there are a lot of through lines where it's a lot of characters playing very similar roles. So like there's a character who in Yakuza 1 plays an informant who also plays an informant. And so whenever it's like, hey, you gotta go meet this informant, I was like, is it that guy?
It was that guy.
But even characters like, you'll remember this, Like a Dragon. What's his name? Jungi, was it Han? The Comey Jewel with the silver hair. Yeah. He plays the Comey Jewel are like spies in and of themselves. Yeah. He plays kind of like an assassin character. Same guy. He plays this secretive basically a spy character, like spy torturer type character. Zhao from Like a Dragon. Yeah, he's also in there.
Zhao's in there?
Yeah, Zhao's in there. Okay. He's got a pretty big role. There are a lot of interesting you'll see these faces pop up. It's really cool. Also too, probably one of the most fun combats of a Yakuza game because
I played the demo and the combat was phenomenal. Yeah,
it's so varied because it's like you have fists, but you also have a sword. You also have a gun. You also have a sword and a gun. Mm-hmm. You also get like these powers, these like partner cards later that let you like cast a lightning bolts and like just weird stuff and so it's like it's legitimate. It feels a lot more strategic in the way like I feel like I'm going into fights. It felt like with other Yakuza like action games, it feels very like, okay, well this is my fighting style whenever I just want to grab stuff. This is my fighting style whenever I'm just gonna I want to throw some fast punches, but like there wasn't one that just like felt like this is situational. This is the, not even that, but just like that I had a choice for different situations. It never felt like, it always just kind of felt like you were picking one. Whereas with this, it's like, okay, if I'm surrounded by a lot of people, I'm going to go sword and gun because he gets all like twirly. He's moving around. He's doing a lot of crowd control. But whenever it's one-on-one, I'm just going big old samurai sword. We're just going at it. Yeah. We're just gonna, you know,
Tsushima energy. Yeah, I guess it has big.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
And,
sorry.
And then whenever I get scared, I just go into a corner, pull out my gun. Just pop. Yeah. Just do it.
Blicky.
Yeah. I will talk more about it. I'm not quite like halfway through, but I'll talk more about it next week. But yeah, really enjoying it. It's Yakuza. Hi. It's good. I'm liking it. Other than that, I played some Slay the Spire while I was waiting for Control to download eight times.
I did restart Celeste on my Steam Deck. So good.
Look at you. Yeah. Slay the Spire. Yeah. Very, very good. It's
I've never played Slay the Spire.
It's very good. It's I played a lot of it on Switch and I had it, I think it was a PS Plus download on PlayStation, so I had it in my library. It's card-based roguelike for everybody listening who hasn't played it. Art style, kind of gross, but the game, top notch. Literally one of the best roguelikes there is. Top five. Easy.
I need to play it.
Very, very good. Corey, do you have anything else?
Not this week. Expect more Baldur's Gate. There isn't really anything coming out until the end of the month, but then it's just a slew of releases till like early November. Basically. I'm sure we'll have a conversation here, probably maybe not next week, but the week after. Like, okay, how do we each want to tackle this? And we might just get into a discussion of like, okay, what are you feeling, Chris? What am I feeling? Armored Core 6, but then there's Starfield, but Spider-Man's also coming. And then there's Goodbye Volcano High, which just looks like going to be an incredible, and it goes on and on. But yeah, that'll be a fun, fun day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Armored Core 6, Sea of Stars.
Oh, there's Sea Starfield. Of Stars.
Starfield and... Yeah, Baldur's Gate 3 for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's Assassin's Creed Mirage, October 12th, Alan Wake 2, October 17th.
Spider-Man 2, October 19th. Spider-Man
2, October 20th.
Oh, my bad.
City Skylines 2, October 24th.
No, I wasn't looking at getting Assassin's Creed Mirage, but then they came out like, it's like maybe 20 hours at most. I'm like... That is exactly what I want out of an Assassin's Creed game. I might just have to now.
Yeah. I don't know. It's going to be thick.
Yeah, we need to have a conversation about how we want to tackle this.
Maybe I'll just quit my job.
Would be nice.
Yeah. We can dream. Goals. Yeah. But until then, Corey, where can people find you on the internet?
People can find me on Instagram at #SlinginThrasher. They can follow us on Twitter at @Arcade_Cozy.
Excuse you. It's X now.
I refuse. I refuse. Sorry, Mr. Sorry, Elon.
Musk. Mr. Musk.
This isn't just one of those things where you get just like, I'm going to name it something different. Everyone now is going to call it that. Sorry, you're a dum-dum. I hope you go bankrupt.
This is now called Birdverse. Bird. I'm just trying to think. Because he has what? He has, Tesla's fine, but he also has SpaceX. What's his satellite internet company? It's Satellix. It's not too far off from that, honestly. It's called Starlink. Starlink
checks out.
Is what it is. Yeah. So, you know, I don't know. Who knows? But yeah, you can follow me.
Follow him, people.
Right now. Yeah, I'm not doing anything. So just follow your favorite baseball team. Yeah.
Atlanta Braves.
They need it. They need
not really.
They need your
no, they don't.
Your support. But yeah, Corey, this has been fun. It's been a while.
Yes.
You know, this has been Arcade Cozy, though. Life is hectic. Why should your hobbies be you? Hobbies
be you, too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Take it easy, people. Have fun. Enjoy Baldur's Gate 3.
Yeah, if you can.
I strongly recommend, if you can.